Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Now, our next guest is an old friend of the station, and indeed of mine. He's an international speaker whose testimony has been heard by thousands around the world. A story of crime as a London gangster before coming to faith in Jesus Christ. He has made Ireland his home, but given the amount of travel that he does, it's hardly surprising that he was on the move when the COVID lockdown kicked in. And in fact, his ordeal trying to get home included spending a number of days in quarantine on a cruise ship. With me now to tell us more, we have John Pridmore. You're very welcome back to the show, John. How are you, man?
Good, mate. How are you, Ronan?
Yeah, good indeed. Listen, first of all, John, how did you end up on a cruise ship?
Yeah, I was doing some talks in Dubai, of all places, and I decided, because they had a really good deal going on a cruise on the way back, and my mum loves cruising, that I thought that I'd treat her and get her a cruise and myself. So I did some talks in Dubai. It's actually the biggest parish in the world now, St. Mary's.
Seriously? Wow, yeah, I didn't know that.
Obviously a lot of migrant workers from Kerala and the Philippines.
Yeah.
But yeah, and so then I got on the cruise on, I think it was about the 12th of March, and we was told that it was meant to go through the Suez Canal and stop at Oman and Egypt and different places.
Lovely.
And end up in Genoa in Italy, and also
beautiful. Yeah.
Visiting Rome.
Lovely.
And of course, when we got on, then we're told that there's been a lot of problems, and we're not actually there, end up at Genoa, because Italy was really bad at the time.
Yeah, of course.
And our final stop would be Marseille in France, and we didn't, you know, worry too much. But then the next day we stopped at Oman, which was very beautiful, and had a look around. There was two more stops at Oman, but then we was told that the cruise couldn't stop at any of the other stops.
Right. And are you getting suspicious at this stage, or are you, what's going on?
Well, to be honest, it was just one of those things that you just have to accept it, you know. And
sure.
Most of the passengers, I think there was probably about 2,000 passengers on board, and we just made the most of it. And it was amazing how you really have to trust God, really, and obviously saying some prayers. And every flight I tried to book from Marseille was just cancelling, you know, as the airlines were sort of stopping flying. All my flights for counselling. But thank goodness for Aer Lingus, because when we did end up in Marseille 2 weeks later, even though we were in quarantine, the police would escort you if you had flights out of the country. And so, and we thankfully got a flight from Charles de Gaulle,
right,
which is in Paris,
sure,
with Aer Lingus. And so we had the police took us off the cruise ship. We waited in a hangar for a few hours, and then we was on a 10.5 hour coach ride across to Paris,
which is a decent, I mean, up from Marseille, massive,
yeah,
massive coach ride,
long way. Especially when you can't get off.
Yeah,
you know, there's just the one bathroom on the coach.
Yeah, exactly. And tell us, how was your mum with all that? I mean, was she freaked, or was she okay?
It was quite hard, because, you know, but I must say, people's you know, there were so many nice people. One of the police women, when they saw my mum come off this cruise, she actually took her mask, which she hadn't used,
yeah,
which was obviously for her, but she gave it to my mum and,
wow,
said, you need this more than me. And there was loves, little acts like that all the way through, where people were ultimately kind and considerate. And then when we got to the airport, the police were there to pick us up, sort of thing. So we got on with the police escort, and then we get off with the police there, and they took us into the actual airport and told us we wasn't allowed to leave. We had to get our flight.
Right.
And we were there for another 7 hours.
No. Oh,
before,
yeah,
our flight,
yeah,
went. So it was quite... And we arrived back on the Feast of Our Lady, 25th,
yeah,
of March, which was, to me, no coincidence.
Yeah.
And there was four of us on the plane, you know, me, my mum, two other passengers, and the crew.
The weirdest flight ever, basically.
Yeah, just no one was flying.
Yeah,
you know? The,
yeah,
only people who were at Charles de Gaulle were actually homeless people who, obviously, they were finding sanctuary in the airport.
Of course, yeah. So even Charles de Gaulle was absolutely, and I mean, Charles de Gaulle is huge.
It is, yeah. And it's, you know, it's normally, I've been there before, it's packed, solid.
Yeah.
Whereas this time, there was nothing. Nothing was open.
Yeah.
There was no people around. It was just like a desert, really.
Yeah, it was like something from Mad Max. That's
weird.
So you flew in. Did you fly into Dublin from there? Or was
yeah,
it?
I flew in from Dublin. And because I live, you know, my mum lives in London, but she decided to come back with me.
Sure.
Because I live in Carrick and Shannon.
Yeah, lovely spot. Lovely spot. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And I'm about 6 miles outside, so it's very peaceful here. Next door to the church, which thankfully is open, so I can pop in there. But yeah, it's just very nice to be back. And I left my car at the airport, so it was very easy to get back with the car, you know.
Yeah, wow.
But yeah, it was a bit of a an escapade, but it was good because through the contacts I had made with the people in Dubai, I actually did another talk on Easter Sunday through Zoom to about 2,000 young people from Dubai and Abu Dhabi. They were all on lockdown, you know.
Yeah, so it brings back for a moment to Dubai. Now, you were saying St. Mary's is the biggest parish in the world, and there's a lot of Indians from Kerala and Filipinos because they'd be working there and they're flown in and all that, and they would be like Catholic, I suppose,
thing. Yeah.
So you then, and was it a youth conference that you were doing?
Yes, I've done quite a few actually. They had a big one last November where it's their sort of national youth conference, which is just outside Abu Dhabi, and that was about 3,000 young people. Archbishop Prowse from Australia, from Canberra, he was also one of the speakers. And so I did that. And I've done a few talks at St. Mary's to the parish, you know, because there's 5,000 families that go to the parish now in St. Mary's.
Wow.
And they're all obviously people who live there and work there, and their children as well, you know.
Yeah.
And so I got to know the priests and also the youth ministers. And so I've got quite a few friends there now. And so, yeah, I've done quite a few talks over the last few years in Dubai and also in Abu Dhabi. And it was the sheikhs, actually, who built the churches. So they're very open.
Yeah, they're interesting,
you know,
the
Catholic faith. They're not at all, you know, like some of the more Middle East places. They're very open.
To people of other faiths.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's really good. Wow. So look, John, I obviously lovely to make contact with you again, but do you have any final word of encouragement for those who are listening in this morning and they're going mad because of the COVID lockdown?
Yeah, I would say don't be afraid to spend some time in silence. I think in our everyday lives we get caught up with trying to distract ourselves, but I found that just sitting in some silence and really trying to seek God and what he's saying to me has really helped me a lot. So that would be my thing. Don't be afraid of just sitting in some silence and really encouraging you to deepen that personal relationship with Jesus. That's what I found in the Holy Spirit as we lead up to Pentecost.
Brilliant. International speaker John Pridmore, thank you so much for talking to us
today. My pleasure.
God bless you, man.
Thanks. God bless all your listeners.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And if you want to look up John Pridmore's talk on the Holy Spirit on that Brisbane Online conference, which also includes other great speakers like Ralph Martin and Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers, who have both spoken on Spirit Radio, you can look it up at www.pentecostpilgrimage.com.
Spirit.
I gave something a plug yesterday on the show. There was a little conversation that Steve was having and we're delighted to bring it to you now. Alex Maristang was on Music and Chat last night, and he's a writer and a speaker from Los Angeles, and we've known him since he was here at the station back in the summer of 2018. Here Steve asks Alex about whether the lockdown is the ideal time for creative writers, and I think you'll find his answer really interesting.
First of all, Alex, like, as a writer, how do you take a moment like this and turn it around to be an opportunity for creativity?
It's really hard to be creative during tough times and stressful times. It's really hard to feel inspired when you're stressed out. And right now, so many of us are stressed out from being locked up at home, for one thing. I think it's more stressful than we think sometimes. And, you know, missing loved ones, or maybe we're worried about getting sick or losing our jobs. We're worried about economics. And one thing I've learned from all the filmmakers I've talked to over the years is that they're able to create on cue. They don't have to wait for inspiration. And when you have a multi-million-dollar film project going on, or you're spending thousands of dollars like in a recording studio, if you're a musician, you can't wait for inspiration. You have to create on cue. I remember a while back I was talking to the director of Mulan, the animated Mulan, not the real life one that they just came out with. But, and he was saying during production, I was asking him about his prayer life, actually. I was asking, hey, what were you praying at the time? And he goes, Alex, I had no time to pray. I was going literally, I had no time to barely even go to the bathroom. And he said it was just meeting after meeting after meeting and checking this and checking that and checking this. And my prayers were basically, he said, just like, God help me, you know, before going into a meeting. And in terms of finding inspiration during those times, it's really difficult when you're under stress. And so I've learned that really, you know, really good artists or good writers, they're able to write on cue. So for me personally, I think this time is a good time to learn how to write without inspiration, because it comes from practice. And a lot of us are finding so much time to practice right now that it's a good time to practice, you know, with or without inspiration. And writing can also be a good escape from stress too. I've been working on a book proposal for a new book, and it's been a good escape from stress. And so right now, a lot of us have time. So I would say watch YouTube videos from screenwriters if you're doing that type of writing, or authors. There's a lot of prominent authors that you can watch giving tips. And, you know, I would say set creative goals to work towards, and basically just write and write and write and some more. And I think we'll all, you know, get better by the time this whole quarantine thing is up.
Yeah, actually, we recently had the Irish novelist Fiona O'Brien with us, and she just said, you know, I aim to write, I think she said 10,000 words a day. You know, so she has a daily target.
Yeah.
A lot of just about putting in the hours and putting in the work.
Absolutely. I heard an interview yesterday, actually, with Britt Marling. It was on TV. She's a screenwriter here in California, and she was talking about how a lot of people think writing should come easy. And that's because we all consume films and we consume books and we consume music. So we kind of feel like experts from the start, just because we've been exposed to so much film and books and music. And, you know, but we'd never think of mastering computer coding as easy, or we'd never think learning how to fix a car would come easily, because there's so much work that goes into honing the craft of writing. And there's so much that I'm still learning. And now's a good time to practice, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really interesting what you're saying about the creative process. And I know that you've actually done a lot of research, and you've talked to a lot of people around the world, haven't you, about the creative process?
Yeah, you know what? I've been learning a lot just from all the people I've been talking to. Before it was for a book I was working on, but right now I have a podcast called The Stories Tour, and I talk to filmmakers and screenwriters and even musicians sometimes, that are making a difference in the mainstream entertainment industry. And it's called The Stories Tour. That's a shameless plug here. because guests come on and they tell stories.
More.
Yeah, they come on the show to tell stories about creativity, of course, like you mentioned, about growing up and about things that have happened on the set of their films, and about their faith and what they've been going through with their faith. And I've learned literally so much in the last year that I've had the podcast. And I'm just learning more and more every day. I've done shows with, like, you know, like Disney director Tony Bancroft that I just mentioned. And last Friday, I interviewed Spirit Radio's own Victoria Johnston, who recently had, as you know, two number one hits in Ireland.
I've been listening to it, Alex. It's fantastic.
Oh, you have? Thank you. Cool. Yeah. So there's a lot of people over from the UK, and Victoria was my first Irish interview. So that was awesome to get her on the show as well. So there's some really cool guests if you like creativity, or even if you don't like creativity and you want to hear some really good faith stories. You can hear it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or even on my website, which is thestoriestour.com.
Brilliant. Alex, what would you say to the person? And there's many people are like this who look around and say, look, I know lots of people who are better writers than me. So what's the point in me writing?
That is a great question. And it's something that we all ask ourselves, no matter what we're doing creatively. We ask ourselves, like, what's the point? You know, why am I doing this even? And I think, part of it is, this is one thing I've actually realized, is that when I talk to people that are really prominent, like filmmakers and, you know, people that are, you know, winning Emmy Awards or nominated for Academy Awards, they're just normal people. Like, literally, they're just normal people in terms of, like, sometimes even their skills, they're very skilled, you know, but there are a lot of people that are skilled in the world. And talking to them, I realized, wow, they were in high school and they had a dream just like I did, you know, or they just had this random idea that popped into their head one day and they decided to chase it, and it actually paid off. And now they're actually influencing lives and, you know, making films. So everybody started with just like an idea, a random idea, but you have to have a bit of confidence in that idea, because to pursue something takes a lot of hours of time, like we talked about. And you have to realize, okay, is this worth the amount of time? You know, is this worth the hundreds of hours that I'm going to have to put into this? And so you have to have a confidence. And I think a lot of that comes from prayer and talking to God and asking him, is this idea something that you want me to pursue? And I think a lot of times if it is, it'll stick with you and that idea will stay. It won't just fade away. You know, the next week it's gone and you don't really care about it anymore. It's something that almost bothers you in a good way. And it's just there. And week after week, it's this idea, you know, I really, really should be doing this. I really need to write this book, or I really need to, pay more attention to my music, or I really need to, learn more about screenwriting. So I think it's something that's persistent. And a lot of times God will confirm that idea with other people that come into your life, or things that happen in your life. And you might meet someone, in the industry that you were trying to pursue, or something else will happen. But, God's a good place to start. You know, you talk to God and God will, I think, confirm those things, whether it's worthwhile pursuing.
That's writer Alex Marestein talking to our very own Steve Johnson. Now, Steve's recommended reading for lockdown is a book by Alex Marestein called 15 Seconds of Normal. So he asked Alex to talk about the book.
So 15 Seconds of Normal is about these desperate days of three 17-year-olds struggling through the worst month of their lives. And the main protagonist is Kea, and she's a student that has just changed to another secondary school on a quest to hide her Tourette's syndrome. And Tourette's syndrome is a disorder that involves repetitive movements or like tics that you can't easily control. So it's really difficult disorder to hide. And she's trying to hide it, in secondary school. And then there's Thatcher, and he is a literature obsessed student, and he's on the edge of a family breakdown. And there's three characters, and Sam, who's an aspiring indie filmmaker. So they're all creatives in their own ways. And the title from the book comes from an Andy Warhol quote, the artist Andy Warhol, which he said, in the future, everyone will be world famous for 15 minutes. But these kids in the book, they don't care about fame. They would settle for 15 seconds of normal. And so that's where the title comes from. So the three meet in an abandoned art gallery at their school. They accidentally meet, and they come up with this daring plan to rewrite the narrative of their lives and to change the world and to find, 15 seconds of normal, which is what they're really craving. So it's a young adult book, but it's actually a book that I think a lot of older people too, and adults have enjoyed reading as well. So because it has a that kind of narrative,
So why did you write a book with characters that were so much maybe not typical characters, not typical high school heroes or whatever, more maybe outsiders?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you said that, because that's exactly what they are. I have always, in all my books, I've looked at it, looking back, there's always an outsider as the main character. And I call them outside voices, because I think outside voices change the world. And I think people don't understand outsiders. And like going back to some of the filmmakers I talked to, almost every single one of them was an outsider growing up. And these are people that are changing the world. And I was an outsider growing up as well. I was a really shy kid, an immigrant kid. I come from a family of immigrants. And so I think in our churches, we need to welcome the outsiders, the people that think differently, the introverts who are sitting in the back row. I think they have so much to offer, and a lot of times we try to change. I'm talking from a United States perspective. We try to change those kids into extroverts. It's like, you need to come up here. You need to worship like we are. You need to clap your hands. You need to be like us. And a lot of times I think we do a disservice to those outside voices. Instead, I think we need to welcome their ideas. We need to welcome their shyness. We need to welcome whatever disorders they might be dealing with, because I think these are the people that can end up changing the world and changing our churches. They have so much insight to give us, because if you talk about, let's say introverts, like I was a big introvert growing up. Introverts, they're quiet, so they're listening, and they perceive a lot of things that are going on in your youth group or whatever, or even in your family, because even though they may not be talking a lot, they're listening a lot. And that's a skill I think we all need to learn a little bit better. So I'm constantly trying to write about the outside voices. I just feel like, that's something that God's put in my heart, to try to lift up the outsider. you know, and kind of put them in the spotlight, even though a lot of times they don't want to be in the spotlight. So that's exactly. Yeah, I definitely wrote about outsiders for that reason.
There's a couple of things I love about the book. One is the way these three characters who are really, really different, they seem to understand each other. Why do you think that is?
Yeah. I think it's like I just mentioned that they're all going through shared pain in their lives. They all have something something deep. There's deep pain going on in their lives. And I think that's something that kind of unites us with humanity in general. If you think of the pandemic right now, I think it's uniting the world, you know, in a sad way. It's not like a good thing, but it's uniting the world because that's one thing that humanity shares is that we share suffering, you know, and I think that's why Jesus came as a man. He came as a man to share in our sufferings, and he's acquainted with our grief, it says. And so I think that's what brings these three together is their grief and their pain, and they decide to work together to, you know, to come out of that situation and to build a better life and to find normal out of that. But I think, a lot of times we try to connect with people, whether on social media or whatever, by talking about, our perfect lives, you know, we try to make our lives look perfect in the pictures that we post and everything. But I think we're going to connect better with people by sharing, you know, sometimes sharing our tears. And I think a lot of that's going on right now and all the suffering that's going on in the world right now.
The other thing, Alex, that struck me, and it's really interesting because you actually used the word right when you were first talking about the book there. You said these are desperate kids.
Yeah.
That was one of the things I noticed. They're desperate. And because they're desperate, they take some risks. And it's really beautiful to see how they find the courage to take those risks. And I was just kind of thinking about it. And I think that was partly because they had there was this teacher that seemed to allow them to take risks. Tell us about that, how sometimes we just need something.
I think,
you know, you need desperation, but maybe you need something more than that to take risks that really will maybe kind of set you on a course for life.
I agree. Yeah, I think we all need someone like a mentor in our lives. And I think that teacher in the book was, I think looking back, I have older kids now in college. I think the teacher in the book was the parent I wish I'd been. You know, I wish I'd been, you know, more, I was very, I have a great family. Everything's going great, but I feel like I was very directed. You know, I think all parents look back, you know, we look back at the way we've done things. I was very directed. Okay. Like now we're going to do this. We're going to do that. My wife and I were very organized and everything was set. You do this and that. And now we'll do our studies and now we go to church. And I kind of, you know, maybe sometimes wish that we were a little bit more disorganized. The teacher in the book was very creative and very like, why don't you try this? And why don't she was guiding them in creativity. And I kind of wish sometimes that I had, let my kids take the reins sometimes on what we do as a family and let them try their wacky ideas and silly ideas and things. And so I think writing that teacher in the book was me going back as a parent realizing it would have been good if I had, you know, had allowed my kids to take more risks and things, although they've turned out great. And, you know, I'm very proud of them, but I think they would have, you know, that would have been good for them too. And so I agree having a mentor that is guiding, but not guiding too much is really important in our lives. And I think that's why I put that teacher, because these three kids are going through such deep pain and just having them sit there and just be sad together, you know, there wouldn't be anything that comes out of that. So I wanted someone to guide them to exactly what you said, to go off and take risks and kind of encourage them, like, you can do it. You know, even though, you know, maybe you're not the most popular kid on this campus, you can do it. Go out there, you know, make something happen because you have value.
What an interesting, interesting man, Alex Maristang there, speaking to Steve about his book, 15 Seconds of Normal. And, you know, he's obviously a guy who has spent a lot of time. I thought he was much younger because of the sound of his voice, but it turns out that he's got older children who are like college age and stuff. But he has really, really dedicated himself to thinking through things very much. And because I've come from a creative background myself, I find wherever I see creativity, it's a really fascinating thing. And I love to hear about those things. The book 15 Seconds of Normal, by the way, by Alex Maristang is available on Amazon and Kindle. And you can also look up his website, thestoriestour.com, where he does podcast interviews with people of faith who work in the film industry and other areas of the arts. Spirit. Now, our next guest is part of a volunteer group who have been creating care packages for frontline workers. With news spreading of these joy packages, it's also reached the attention of celebrities, including singer Christy Moore and jockey Johnny Murta, who have donated and contributed signed products towards an auction that will raise additional funds for these care packages. And on the line to tell us more, we have Pastor PJ Booth from Open Arms Church in Newbridge. You're very welcome to the show, Pastor PJ. How are you?
Good morning, Ronan. I'm very good indeed. Good morning to all your listeners.
Yeah, so first of all, PJ, how did this idea of care packages for frontline staff come up?
Well, look, we're obviously within our community in South Dublin and Kildare, and we've always been reaching out to our community. And so I just happened to say, hey, what can we do? What are the practicalities? So the first thing was we looked at Ness Hospital with the nurses and the carers, but then our attention was drawn very quickly to the nursing homes. And we have a lot of carers and nurses within our own community who work there. And we start asking questions, and they're telling us, guys, we're not getting support. A lot of our staff are out sick. Yeah. And we're arriving home after a 12, 14-hour shift, and we are exhausted. So the idea came about and said, hey, why don't we prepare a little pack for the workers as they leave their stations in the morning? And we'll put in shampoos and hand creams and chocolates and all kinds of things like that.
Good,
and
yeah.
That's what we start doing, just to care for them. And say thank you.
It literally is a care package. You're communicating care to them, aren't you?
We are. We are indeed. And, you know, there's a lot of... I've been on to hospitals right around the country, and they're getting a lot of stuff, and they're getting food. But when the nurses and carers leave the hospital, they leave empty-handed. And that's when you're mostly... You know, you're tired. Like, we're putting in fluffy socks to the girls who are going home and taking their slippers off, and they're tired. And just a nice shampoo, a nice sanitizer, you know, an energy bar, stuff like that, that really says, hey, we love you, we appreciate you, we see you.
Yeah.
You're not on your own. We
see
you.
Absolutely. It's such a good idea, actually, because it's funny. You know, when people are in crisis, they're in kind of survival mode, and they're in crisis mode, and there's nobody to think about, you know, other than just sheer survival. What? How are you? You know, are you all right? How's it going? So who have you been delivering them to?
Well, what we've done is, we really centered in on nursing homes. So at the moment, we have a list of 18 nursing homes. We have delivered at the moment to about 9 of them. Nursing homes right across Kildare and South Dublin. Like, for instance, I think it was the day before yesterday, we delivered to St. Mary's in the Phoenix Park. And they have had a lot of tragedy there.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of their staff are also out sick.
Yeah.
And we, you know, Willowbrook, Larchfield, all these people are on Kildare as well.
Okay, you know, it's funny, I was just thinking about St. Mary's the other day. They literally had 11.5% of the people who were there die on them.
That's,
you know, I was just saying, like, apart from the absolute tragedy that is to the individuals and their families, it can be very traumatizing for the staff, can't it?
Very traumatizing. And this is probably very personal to me. My mom died at 91 in a nursing home. Now, that was 4 years ago.
Yeah.
We had her in our home for a while, but she was a heavy lady, so she went to a nursing home. And those nurses took such great care of her. You know, she had her favorite used to come in the morning, one guy, and she had a little twinkle in her eye, and they would cream her hands, and, you know, to touch her face. And really, they were an extended part of her family. And so we just saw that when I visited and these staff were there, my mom treated them like they were her kids. And so it's very personal. And I know that a lot of these people who are in care, they love their clients. You know, they love these people. And when one of them pass away, it's like losing a member of the family.
Yeah.
So and again, we want to say, hey, we get you. We understand you. We're with you. Because we don't expect you to be so professional that you're not connected to people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, you have absolute personal experience of just how real the connection is between those carers. And, you know, that is absolutely not just professional. It's so much more than that. And I could really totally understand why you'd want to, in some way, connect back to them as people and go, look, we're looking after you as well. So, look, when you brought it to the church, PJ, how did people react? Did people want to get involved?
Well, we have loads of volunteers, I must say. Look, in our church, in both locations, we have in excess of 300 volunteers.
Wow.
And all of them. Now, it's a challenge trying to get people. So we deliver to homes, we wear our masks and our gloves, and we try social distancing.
Sure.
Everything is a little slower, but so many people want to get involved. They really do. And the other thing we've managed to do, Ronan, is we also, there are 8 Tuslo care homes around Kildare, Dublin area as well.
Oh, right.
And we've sent care packages to them. And then we have our own care homes between Mayo and Newbridge, and there's 16 of them. So we've also sent parcels and packages and fruit and water and all kind of stuff into these homes as well. So it's great.
Wow. So I was surprised, but your joy packages reach the ears of Christy Moore and Johnny Murta. And first of all, how do they hear? And then tell us about their involvement and their own contributions.
Right. Well, we made contact with them because they're local people. And we said, look, this is what we're doing. Would you like to support it? So Christy wrote out one of his songs, The Car of Kildare, that he performed in a pub here in Newbridge back in 1966 with Donald Lunny. And so he wrote it out by hand and put in a little note of what happened on the night. And it was Easter weekend celebration in 1966, so that's not today nor yesterday. Gee. And he said, look, we want to support all the work you're doing and try and raise some funds for this.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. And the same thing with Johnny Murta. He pulled up a video on his Facebook and said, look, support this thing. But one of the things we're doing also, we're producing T-shirts. And the T-shirt simply says, thank you to all frontline services. And we're selling the T-shirts to raise the funds that we can prepare more care packages.
Yeah. It must be very encouraging, is it, when you come up with, you really feel like you've heard something from the Lord, you get moving on it, and people just start moving in and doing it.
Well, I tell you what the interesting, I suppose, that has affected me is when we deliver to some of these nursing homes, we had one owner come out and she started crying.
Yeah.
She said, you're the first community people who've recognized us. We thought we were invisible. And we're saying, no, we see you. And now we're in touch with restaurants, one lovely Chinese restaurant in Mayo, who is delivering in the evening to the staff as well. So this is spreading and gaining momentum.
Wow.
I suppose we're getting cards and texts from people and say, hey, thank you so much. And a lot of it's an emotional effect on people.
Yeah, I mean,
you can talk about the Lord all day, but, until someone comes and touches you at that emotional level, I'm a pastor, I preach the gospel, for 29 years, that's what I've done. But when you touch someone at the depth of their heart, we say, this gospel is real, Jesus is real, we care, we see you.
Absolutely. It's a real witness, and very, very kind of flesh and blood witness as well. You know, as you say, you can use words, but sometimes you can do something and that can really get people to their heart, So how can listeners support this initiative?
So one of the easy things to do is you just go to openarms.ie/frontline. And you'll see it. You can either buy a T-shirt online. You can make a contribution. Some people have come along and give them, say, a 10-euro contribution. Some people much more. We have businesses who are getting involved. We have so many of our local pharmacies, chemists, and stores contributing goods as well.
Amazing.
So, but the easy way is openarms.ie/frontline.
Lovely. Pastor PJ Booth from Open Arms Church in Newbridge, thank you so much for talking
to
us.
You're welcome, Dave. Thank you very much for the time.
Thanks. Bye-bye. And as PJ says, you can donate online and support the making of these care packages through their website, openarms.ie.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.